Good morning again. I'm Jim Dewey, Talk Radio 930 WTAD, with today's edition of the Mary Griffith Show. And Mary is on a nice trip out toward Colorado. Should be some beautiful weather, I hope, for her out there. Maybe even some snow up in the elevations where they're going, Colorado Springs and such. But we are here holding down the fort, and today my first guest is Todd Shackelford, the director of the Advocacy Network for Children in Quincy, and we want to talk about superheroes. And running.
Good morning, Jim. Yes.
Good morning.
We are having a superhero family fun challenge, which is a 5K run and walk that's going to be at Madison Park on October 15th. And registration begins around 8:30, and then we start the run and walk about 9 o'clock. And then after that, we have a little run for little people and for the kids, and they get to chase villains through the park. It's going to be really cool.
That'll be fun.
And so we're it's going to be an excellent time for everybody. We're encouraging everyone to come out in costume, of course, as their favorite superhero. And you're also welcome to bring pets.
Oh, yeah.
So I would assume dogs.
Not too many cats are excited about running.
No. And so you could do the run or walk with the pets, and you can actually put costumes on your pets.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
I've seen this. My wife is with the Casa Board down in Hannibal, and
yes.
They had one of these a couple of years ago. And it is fun because people come out as various superheroes, whether they're the ones we're familiar with or maybe superheroes that they've created on their own.
Correct, exactly. And so it's definitely a family event, and it's a morning of that busy October 15th day in our beautiful city.
Oh, yeah, that is a busy, busy weekend. So Madison Park, so they're just going to run around the park, or what is the course?
Well, those who wants to do the 5K run walk, we have a route already established, and they would do that route and come back. And then for the little ones that, you know, for about, there's a fun run for children under 8, and that's right in the park. And they'll, like I said, run around and chase villains, or villains will chase them, one of the two. And then there's a playhouse and some jumping houses and stuff that people will be, the kids will be playing in. And so it'll be a fun time until about 11 o'clock, and then we'll unplug those and then send everybody on their way.
Send everybody home.
Yeah.
Or to the Color Run or to the Folklife Festival.
A lot of those things.
All of the other events that are going on.
Exactly.
Let's hope for, first of all, beautiful weather and nice colorful leaves. Madison Park is so pretty.
Yes. We're anticipating great weather, and of course, we do have some really wonderful sponsors for this event who've really helped us get things going. Napide Manufacturing Company and Gardner Denver, Quincy Herald Wig, and, of course, Quincy Medical Group. And they've all really helped us to get this started and run, and we're really excited about it.
Of course, it is a fundraiser, which means there is a charge to participate.
There is. It's registration, and you can do that on our network, our Advocacy Network for Children website. And it is $30 for adults, but you'll get a T-shirt and then for children, it's only $20, but that includes a cape, which is really cool,
A
T-shirt as well. So.
Cape, so you can chase after those villains.
That's right. it should be great fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun morning. Do people need to pre-register, just show up?
We'd love for them to pre-register and go online to do that. If you can't go online to do that, you can come to our office at behind the old Illinois Bank building and come upstairs to the Advocacy Network for Children office, and we can get you registered.
Okay. What's the website address?
The website address is advonet.org. And then / superhero, and that gets you to the site that you can register with.
All right. For people who aren't quite familiar or maybe don't remember all of the things that the Advocacy Network does, and I know you do CASA and other advocacy activities, tell us about the network.
Well, we have a lot of programs and a lot of services, and they all are designed to help the children and non-offending families who have suffered abuse or severe neglect or sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we are there to help them through the process of the court systems. We're there to help them through and provide counseling and some advocacy and referral. and to make sure that process working with the law enforcement and DCFS and all of those other people goes smooth and well for them and try to get them back on the road to healing.
Something like that takes a lot of volunteers, and I know especially with CASA, those volunteers need specific training. Who are you looking for as far as volunteers?
Well, we're looking for people who, number one, deeply care about children, number two, deeply care about our community, because the abuse of children is a huge problem, and it really erodes our community terribly. So we were looking for people who really want to step up and make a difference. And you can do that one child at a time.
Yeah, and it's such an important part of that child's process through whether it be abuse or whatever it is that child is having to go through to have an advocate who is on their side, period.
Exactly. And that's the volunteer, the CASA advocate. It has only one client, and that's that child. And they are the ones that speak to the court and make recommendations to the court based on their experience and their training that they've gotten.
Right. What is the process then for a volunteer? What do they need to do besides just coming in saying, hey, I'd like to do this?
Well, of course, as much as we would love to have as many volunteers as possible, we have to be picky. Number one, they have to go through a background check, mm-hmm. and that is an extremely thorough background check. The other thing is that they need to have the training for our program, and that is extensive, and we do some training, and then we do some mentoring of the volunteer, and we go to court with them, and then we assign them to a child, and we will work with them and the child to make sure that the chemistry is right, and then we're always there to help them through
sure.
the whole process.
Sure.
But they actually get sworn in with the court
right.
because they are court-appointed special advocate for the children.
Yeah, and it's a program that's been around for a while, and it has spread throughout the Midwest now, which is great, and it's really helping lots of children, and especially when a child is having to deal with, first of all, just being in court in the first place and having to deal with maybe testifying against a parent or having a parent who was abusive even in the same room, it helps to have a friend.
Absolutely, and the bond between the volunteer and the child is that of this is the person who's going to help take care of me, not physically,
right.
not
you're not looking
anything.
At foster parenting,
right.
not looking at adoption or anything
right.
like that. You are their legal
right. We like to say we're not asking volunteers to raise the child. We're asking the volunteers to raise their hand to help the child and to get them through this process and get them on the road to recovery and to heal. We consider these kids who have been traumatized and abused that we consider them survivors, and
yeah.
they need to heal, and that's what we're there for.
All right, Advocacy Network for Children is the organization. Let's talk again about the Superhero Fun Run, which everybody's invited to, and you even mentioned the family pet. I suppose if somebody wanted to bring a pet goat.
That's
or,
right.
A pig.
It is a family fun run, and it is a family event. But say you don't have kids or your kids have all gone off to college or what have you, you're welcome to bring little Fido over and put a cape on him or a bandana. And
well, and a lot of people just like running in a 5K.
Oh,
so
and that's
great.
Fun, too. It's a great running
experience. You're going to run anyway. Come and bring a few bucks. And
exactly. It's a good cause. And we're really excited. We had a group of individuals come forward, chaired by Aaron Napide, come to us and say, we'd love to do this for you. And so we couldn't obviously turn them down.
Yeah.
In fact, we're thrilled that they're doing it, and we're flattered and humbled. But it's going to be an excellent event, and so we encourage everybody to register online if possible. If not, come by our office and see us. We'll be happy to help you with that. I just think it's going to be a fantastic day.
Yeah. Now, again, it starts at 9 o'clock Saturday morning at Madison Park, but do you want people there? Is getting there at 9 o'clock, or do you want them there ahead of time so they can be there for
as
the
ahead of time as possible
for the
that
starting
they feel comfortable
gun, yeah.
with? Yeah, there's a playground there and everything.
Sure.
So, but it's going to be neat to see all the costumes and everybody that's going to come. So I know myself, I'm trying to find a costume that might fit, but it's going to be a difficult task.
Yeah, I would be a Pancake Man or maybe Duff Man.
I'm thinking a cape.
Yeah, big cape. Not you, me.
Oh.
Big cape. It is 928 at Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We've been talking with Todd Shackelford about the Superhero Family Fun Challenge. Again, that is Saturday at Madison Park. And that website again?
Advonet, that's advonet.org. And
right.
then you can find your way to the Superhero event and
or,
get on registration.
Or if you're interested in volunteering, there'll be information on that as well.
Absolutely.
We're going to step aside. We'll check in with the folks at Ursa Farmers Co-op, find out what the markets are doing here in just a moment. Then Henry Sweets from Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum will join us on The Mary Griffith Show. I'm Jim Dewey. 9:34 WTAD. Jim Dewey here in for Mary Griffith on The Mary Griffith Show. And a beautiful sunny day, and that's what we like, especially this time of the year, as weather starts to get a little cooler and colors start to pop on our trees, although right now everything's still a nice lush green. And speaking of green, because it has no relation to our topic, I have on the phone Henry Sweets and Melissa.
You got it.
Yeah, my brain just went totally fried. Cummings from the Mark Twain Boyhood Home. And we wanted to talk, first of all, about the big event you had last week where you cut the ribbon, finally, on the Becky Thatcher house. And that is a nice, nice addition to the Boyhood Home. So tell us all about that.
Well, we've been working for the last several years on the restoration of the building, which we completed about 3 years ago. And then we started working on the exhibits that we wanted to put in there, Jim. And last Tuesday, we had the ribbon cutting to open those exhibits. And perhaps just to walk a person through what they would see if they came would be a good way to describe what's there.
Sure.
Since we have a fictional name of Becky Thatcher and also a childhood name on the house by calling it the Becky Thatcher House, we decided that we would take a look at childhood at the time the Clemens family was here in Hannibal inside the home. And we decided that we would use some of the fictional characters because, after all, Tom Sawyer is the book that's bringing people to Hannibal many, many times. And so when you step into the house, the first room, you will figure out who Becky Thatcher is versus Laura Hawkins, the real person. So we identify the real people that Mark Twain used as the models for the characters in the book right at the beginning. And you'll find out what happened to the real person, Laura Hawkins, that she grew up, eventually became the matron for the Home for the Friendless here in Hannibal, and lived quite a long life here around the area. Then you will start the trek of looking at the book itself and the fact that the characters really remain ageless in the book. We take a look at the way that Tom Sawyer and Becky Thatcher have been presented through the years by various artists who've illustrated the book. Then you're introduced to Becky Thatcher, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and Jim. And this being the Jim from Tom Sawyer, not the Jim from Huckleberry Finn. And you have an opportunity to pick up a little character card and then follow your character through different situations. And this begins with a series of clocks where you can turn the dial and see what your character would have been doing at different times during the day. And going from an upper middle class like Becky to a very low class like Huck to an enslaved boy, the characters would have had different things occupying their time through the day. We then look at the household and what they would have been doing around the household, a look at their future, what sort of adult life would be expected for each of those four figures. We would then step into a schoolroom, And Tom and Becky are sitting there in the schoolroom with you because they attended school. Huck could not afford school because you had to pay to go to school in those days. And Jim was forbidden by law to go to school. So they're looking in a window at what's going on in the school. And that gives us a chance to talk about who attended school, who school was for, and then what you would have been learning in school in those days. So we've got situations like that for you to visit. We also take a look at the history of the Tom and Becky program, because that's a program the museum has taken over now and certainly comes from the book Tom Sawyer. And people have a chance to take a good look at the contestants that have been the Toms and Beckys through the years, as well as finding out about the contest. Then we end up with a room that's kind of the kids at home. What sort of homes did they live in? And then what type of possessions would they have had? And I think it's a very stark realization that when you get finished with the exhibits, that these children did not have equal lives, that depending on your status, you were going to have quite a different future from your neighbor.
Well, as you pointed out, you had to pay to go to school, and so Huck didn't go, and as a slave, Jim was not even allowed to even think about going. So it is an interesting look at the class levels of society in the 1830s and 40s. Tell us a little bit about what went into the actual renovation of the home. You didn't have to do a complete reconstruction as was done on the Boyhood Home several years ago, but there was quite a bit to do. It's not a new house.
Well, many of the same problems faced the building as faced the Boyhood Home. We didn't have to take it apart as far as we did the Boyhood Home because the structure was in a little better physical condition. But literally, we went underneath it and put metal beams underneath the first floor to help support the new weight load that we were expecting our visitors to be putting on the structure. We went inside, and every place that there were timbers that were bowed or rotted in any way, new timbers were sistered against them to give the strength we needed. We added a lot of strength for the second floor. I think in past years, a lot of the second floor had been used for storage, and a lot of weight had been put up there, so the ceilings were actually bowed some and had to be straightened up. And we went through and did that sort of structural work throughout the house to ensure that it's going to remain there for a long time into the future.
Yeah, that house is what, about 170-plus years old? So.
Well, it goes back to the 1840s, so it's got some age, yes, sir.
Yeah. So other amenities added to the house include getting from that house to the next level. Since it is on the side of a hill, you've added some assistance for the handicapped visitors.
With our public buildings, we're trying to make them as handicapped accessible as we can. And when we did the exterior work about 3 years ago, we added a ramp on the front to get people up to the first floor of the Becky Thatcher house, avoiding any stairs if they so choose. Then the entire first floor that the visitors are using is, of course, flat and one level. Today, when you come out the east side of the building towards the Justice of the Peace building, we put a handicap lift there. So a person who cannot tackle the stairs or needing a wheelchair for assistance can use that lift to lower them down to the ground level of the Justice of the Peace building. And we, at the Justice of the Peace building, again, removed any barriers so that you can enter it off of a level piece of ground and tour the that building without having to tackle the steps that were there until last year.
All right. And, of course, the next building that's going to be worked on is the old drugstore. Any progress on that at this point?
Well, we took our leave and caught our breath for about a week and got started with an architect to do as-is drawings of the Pallaster House or Grant's Drugstore. That building is history says, came in a knocked-down prefab form from Cincinnati, Ohio in 1836. So it's a very early building. And through the years, with flooding, the building had sunk in a number of places. If you look at the second-floor windows, I don't think you'll see two windowsills that line up with each other, which shows how the building has settled. And back in the 1950s, the building was given to the city, and they fixed it up and opened it around 1960 to the public. And when they did that, they basically arrested all of the motion that the building had had and left it in place. Rather than trying to straighten it, they just stabilized it. The project that we're going to undertake will, again, straighten everything up, replace timbers that have been rotted. It's going to be a major overhaul of that building, as we've done on each of the buildings we've gone through.
And that building, just a couple of years ago, you actually had to do a little bit of emergency stabilization, didn't you? Put in a steel beam upstairs?
Yes, indeed. The exterior wall facing the museum mall was beginning to bow outwards. And so we went in and put some beams in that are fastened to the studs in the wall and then fastened into the floor joists all the way across to the other wall just to hold the building from expanding outwards. And that worked. There's been no more outward motion since we put that in place. But that, again, reflects the fragile condition that the building is in.
Right. Interesting history that it was a prefab. I don't know that the people really realized that there was such a thing. You actually could order them through a catalog, couldn't you, at one time?
Yes, there was a firm in Cincinnati, Ohio, that put out catalogs like that. And this, of course, was a store-type building. If you look at the front of the building, you have window-door across the front. It was two storefronts on the first floor, and then we're presuming living quarters upstairs when it was originally designed. And you could order, apparently, different size buildings and different configurations that were available. And that we think of more out of probably the 1940s, 50s time period in American history rather than the 1830s. But that just shows that some of these things are a lot older than we dream.
Been around longer than we thought. Lots of activities, of course, in the summertime at the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum, but those activities don't necessarily stop in the fall. You had a nice fundraiser over the weekend with the Muddy River Radio Theater doing a production of Huck based on a 1940s radio broadcast. That turned out pretty well. What else is in the planning for this fall?
Well, coming up in November, you know, it's Mark Twain's birthday, so we're going to be holding our annual Mark Twain birthday bash here at the museum. Last year, I don't know if you were there or not, we had a mustache competition.
I was. I came in third out of three.
Well, there you go. You can start planning now because we're going to be holding that mustache competition. It's going to be on the 26th of November, and we'll have those three categories again, the Mark Twain stash, of course, the Dapper Stash, which you can braid it, curl it, whatever you'd like to do. And then also the Judge's Choice or the Manliest Stash, we'll call it. And so we'll be having those competitions. So anybody out there, get ready for that No Shave November month because it's coming. And then we're going to be holding the Masquerade Mask competition. We did that last year as well. We will have paper mache masks here at the Museum Gallery at 120 North Main, and any artist or artist-to-be can come get one of those from us, and they can decorate it however they would like to and enter it into that competition. We'll have two categories. We'll actually have the mask on display a week prior to the 26th, and they will be in the auditorium here at the gallery, and tourists and the public can vote on their choice for the best mask, and we will announce the People's Choice winner around 2 o'clock on the 26th, as well as a Judge's Choice winner.
Okay.
So that will be going on. And something new we're going to do, we'd like to feature some local artists here. The Quincy, Hannibal area and surrounding areas have a lot of wonderful artists. We are going to have an artist exhibit. We'll have tables available throughout the museum, and artists can display some of their skills and some of the things that they created, and also people that are kicking off that holiday shopping can shop and and purchase from these artists.
Oh, okay. And when will that be? That'd be just that same weekend?
That is. It's going to be all on Saturday, November the 26th. The artist fair will be from 10 to 4 o'clock at the Museum Gallery at 120 North Main here. And then 1 o'clock, the mustache competition, and 2 o'clock, the announcement of the mask winners.
Okay. And the mask competition, is that for any ages?
It is. It's any ages. We do not designate an age category. They're all kind of thrown in there together. But we have youth through adults. And last year, we had quite a few artists that entered. Even Hannibal High School had a class that did the mask, and they were entered, and they did a lot of paper mache, and they added some metal pieces to it. Very interesting concept on how to change the mask look. I mean, you could do so many different things. You could, you know, cut a piece of it off, Phantom of the Opera style. You can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and it's not a thing where you have to stay with a certain period or a certain art style. It's free for all.
Correct. Well, we felt there's so many different styles of art out there. You may be a painter, you may be a sculptor. Whatever it is that is your medium to use, you can utilize that.
Okay. I know throughout the summer and spring and fall, you've had lectures at the museum. Will those continue, or is there kind of a season for that?
Well, Jim Waddell has been doing a presentation that's basically taking a look at how the book Tom Sawyer came to be. And he has recitations from a number of Mark Twain's writings, from his autobiography, from different short stories that he did that trace the development of the ideas that culminate with the book. And this is presented at 4 o'clock Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoons here at the Museum Gallery. There's no charge for that. Anyone's welcome to come to that. Just get here a few minutes before 4 because he starts promptly at 4 o'clock. The performance lasts about 25 minutes or so, and this will be going on until October 23rd. So people got just about a month to come in and listen to this program that's brand new this year on the development of basically the inspiration for Tom Sawyer.
All right. Yeah, Jim does a great job with those presentations. And of course, people who maybe haven't been down to the museum recently, you know, it's one thing to say I'm from Hannibal. I think it's another to say, and I've been to the Mark Twain Boyhood Home Museum, because, you know, you're walking down the street, strangers will come up and ask, and it's nice to have gone through it and be able to tell them what they're going to see, or in some cases, even how to get there. But there's some artwork there that's on loan that is quite famous works from Norman Rockwell.
Well, actually, Jim, we have right now the Norman Rockwell paintings for Tom and for Huck are a permanent part of our collection. We have borrowed the one of the fence painting scene, which is the only one we don't own. It's on loan, and it's going to have to go back to the Farnsworth Art Museum up in the state of Maine before very long. So if you'd like to see that one, I'd recommend that you get in here fairly soon to see it. But Norman Rockwell gave the rest of the paintings. We have 15 of the original paintings for the special editions of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn that are part of our permanent collection.
Yeah, and that's cool to see that. And, of course, there are other things at the museum besides just the Mark Twain. I mean, there's a lot of history there. But the way you've got the museum set up with the permanent displays on Huck Finn and on the Gilded Age and King Arthur's court, it's a lot of fun. If the local folks haven't been there, you owe it to yourself and your family to make that trip.
Well, we certainly invite everyone to come to the museum. And, Jim, if we got just a minute here, there's another way that people can come to the museum that they might not think about, and that is that we allow building rentals in our museum gallery building. And I'll let Melissa speak a little bit about some of the types of groups that have used our facility.
Yeah, we have several opportunities here at the museum, and I don't think a lot of people realize that we do offer that here at the museum. We have anything from a boardroom setting to an auditorium, to a floor. You could have an event in the Rockwell area if you would like, or the whole museum. Last Friday, we had the Hannibal High School class of 1961. Over 100 people rented the museum for their class reunion. It was a wonderful time. So we've had wedding receptions and weddings here. So it kind of gives you a, you can have an event in a historic setting, if you would, so to speak, yeah. And it's kind of a nice thing to think about, whether than, you know, an opportunity to do something a little bit different.
And my in-laws had their 50th anniversary party there.
Did they? Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, so that's a nice place. How do people rent that?
Well, you can just contact us at the museum, 221-9010, extension 401, and you can talk to Mai, and she can give you all the information on what it is, and she can help you figure out what it would be best suited for as well, based on the size of the people that you're expecting to be at your event. And then in the nicer times of the year as well, we have the Boyhood Gardens, an outside setting that we have rented out too.
Nice. All right. So, folks, lots of opportunities. And, of course, the museum is open year-round with breaks for certain holidays, but otherwise take advantage of all of the history there in Hannibal. Henry, Melissa, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.